From the CME Group Research to Practice, this is Beyond the Guidelines, PARP Inhibitors in the Management of Ovarian Cancer, a virtual satellite event to the 2020 Society of Gynecologic Oncology meeting, originally planned for Toronto. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love with a roundtable discussion featuring faculty members Drs. Rob Coleman, Stephanie LaRue, Joyce Liu, and Katie Moore. For presentations and interviews with the faculty, please go to researchtopractice.com/SGO2020satellites. Prior to this event, we conducted a survey of 25 gynecologic and medical oncology investigators and also 50 community-based physicians and meeting registrants, querying them about their usual practice patterns in the disease. During the roundtable discussion, we discussed these clinical issues and a number of faculty cases, beginning with Dr. Liu.
So this was a 58-year-old woman. She presented with advanced stage 3 disease. Her surgeon took her for a primary cytoreductive surgery, so she had optimal cytoreductive surgery, although she did require several bowel resections with primary anastomoses for this. And she started on adjuvant chemotherapy with carboplatin and paclitaxel in that setting. I actually, at our institution, we can send somatic testing as well as germline testing. So I sent off both somatic testing and germline testing basically at the same time. And her somatic testing came back first and actually turned out to have no evidence of a BRCA mutation. But then her germline testing came back with this deletion in exon 3, basically full deletion of exon 3, which was quite interesting to see. Given this, I actually went back to our internal folks. I asked them to look at the next-gen sequencing, and it turns out that, in fact, on the next-gen sequencing assay, you could see the deletion in exon 3, but you couldn't call it because of the amount of artifacts, so they could not actually make that call without having the test from the germline to make the call. And so she finished her chemotherapy. She was in remission, so I started her on maintenance olaparib.
And how long has she been on treatment, and how's she doing?
She's doing okay on maintenance olaparib. She's been only on it for a couple of months, so this was a pretty recent occasion, but she's doing well on therapy.
I'm just kind of curious with her. Any GI problems? There were a lot of questions about preemptive medication. Any problem with her?
No, she's actually been tolerating it okay. I mean, she had a little bit of nausea, but not anything sort of significant. I give people a Compazine script that they can fill and sort of take if they have nausea, but I don't tell people to take it, you know, prophylactically before every dose.
Katie, any comments? You know, you see all kinds of weird BRCA stuff, and you know, here's another example of it. How do you figure out whether or not it's something that, you know, would respond to a PARP inhibitor?
Well, fortunately, the assays that are available will tell us whether it's a deleterious mutation or not. And so you have to be careful. And we're pretty good at calling variants. And so variants, at least if we're talking about using PARP inhibitors for patients with BRCA mutations, either germline or somatic, we can figure that out well from the assays. I think Dr. Liu's case really nicely and somewhat concerningly, that's not a word, illustrates our challenge right now, because from a cost effectiveness standpoint, sending the tumor first and then reflexing to germline makes a lot of sense. Yeah. But we know from SOLO-1, where we knew everybody's germline, but when we looked at the next gen sequencing, we missed 5%, mainly these large rearrangements and call frequencies. So you miss 5% of your germline patients, which is kind of critical, was critical for getting them a PARP inhibitor until 2 weeks ago, but also very critical for cascade testing and preventing these tumors in relatives. So this is a great case that illustrates the need for both for now.
So before Rob, I'm going to ask you to comment, but I just want to, a question that came in that I think might be almost beginning of a theme. Here's a verbatim a question. Given the highly evolving space of frontline maintenance of ovarian cancer, does a biomarker-driven approach make the most sense in light of the recent approval? So we'll just sort of keep that question in the back of our mind. Rob, take a look at this second case of Joyce's, another interesting situation as it relates to testing. Joyce, what happened with this 52-year-old woman?
So this is a 52-year-old woman. She came in with advanced disease. She actually had ascites and was recommended for neoadjuvant chemo. She had a really nice response to that, went for surgery, had an optimal IBS with a complete pathologic response in her omental disease, although she did have some residual high-grade serous carcinoma involving both tubes and ovaries. She got three additional cycles of adjuvant carboplatin and paclitaxel. She had germline testing first. That was negative for a BRCA mutation, and I actually sent her for a Myriad My Choice test, and she actually came back with a high genomic instability score. So given that by the Myriad test, she tested positive for HRD, I actually put her on maintenance niraparib. Mm-hmm.
So again, we're going to look at what your colleagues are doing in this situation. But Rob, any comments about this case?
The one variable that you could have considered here is whether or not the patient would have gotten bevacizumab during the induction treatment. That would have opened up some options as of 2 weeks ago. But I think our sense is that in the BRCA wild-type HRD patient population, we have seen objective responses in the recurrent setting, and we have seen benefit to HRD, isolated HRD in the platinum-sensitive recurrent setting, and now it's been mirrored in the frontline setting as well.